This is not the age of information. This is not the age of information. Forget the news, the radio, the blurred screen. This is the time of loaves and fishes. People are hungry, and one good word is bread for a thousand. One good word is bread for a thousand. Thanks to David White, the poet who wrote those words. What good word will bring peace of mind to us? What will inspire us to live in humility, in compassion, like Jesus? Long ago, the Apostle Paul urged the church in Philippi, "Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility regard others as better than yourselves. Let each of you look not to your own interests, but to the interests of others. Let the same mind be in you that was in Christ Jesus. He emptied himself, taking the form of a slave." If we are paying attention to the world, it's very clear that humility and service are not values that we prize or praise. Humility, it's actually a difficult word to talk about. It almost doesn't come out of my mouth very well. It has to come from a healthy place, not a place of oppression. It has to come from genuine love. Humility, it was difficult for the early church in Philippi, and it's a difficult word today. But perhaps this is the best good word we could hope for in this time, when our nation, our community, our planet needs unity of purpose and care. Pride isolates, where humility connects. Pride is interested in the self at the expense of others, whereas humility is interested in the others, sometimes at expense of the self. And self-emptying love is the core of Jesus' life and death and message to us. If you're like me right now, you might be tempted to think of all those people who really need to work on the pride problem. But honestly, don't we all struggle with this in some way? It's hard to discern where the problem is. So I ask you, if you are struggling with that, think about where is separation and isolation a problem in my life? And if you can identify that, ask, is pride a part of that? Not all separation is about pride, though. As I mentioned, I've been gone for 3 months on sabbatical leave. It was a wonderful time. But there were times during that separation I really hated being away. During my absence, the skies of the Pacific Northwest were heavy with ash. There were hurricanes, floods, earthquakes, drowning and shaking communities. World leaders flung threats in each other's faces. People we loved died. How does humility fit into this urge for humility? How does humility fit with loss and with suffering? Here's the good word. When we are overcome with suffering, love can move us to compassion and to action. And Christ's love is what empowers us to give something up of ourselves for others. Just a little over a week ago, our dear friend Ann Huntwerk died. She knew about giving up personal freedom for the sake of others. She marched, sang, wheelchaired in peace protest to the end of her days. In her 80s, she spent 6 months in federal prison for her continued peace protests at the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia. Her actions were to help others who were oppressed. Her actions demonstrated the Christ mind. It's not intellectual conformity. Christ mind is about action from love and compassion. Look not to your own interests, but to the interests of others. Thank you, Anne. In his letter to the Philippians, Paul wrote from prison. He wrote about unity and joy. He was affectionate towards the Philippians. The tone of the letter is warm. People have learned to share their lives and to appreciate one another. Strangers became friends. But Paul had news about conflicts in that church, and he invited them to take even closer to heart the gift of friendship and love they had received. He wrote about having a same mind. We know that powerful things are at work in our lives and our world that destroy unity. But Christ's love, Christ's risen power, can bring healing and make us whole. So have you ever seen a time when strangers became friends? I like to think of those times we're at our best. Those have been the best times in the presbytery meetings that I've been to, when people on opposite sides listen to each other because of our unity in Christ. We packed a lot into my sabbatical time, and I have so many stories to share with you. Have you got a few hours? I'll share just a little bit right now. In September, I had the privilege and honor of being able to spend 2 weeks in Italy, and part of that time was with poet David White. 30 of us from different nations gathered in Florence. We listened to David, and we walked on long walks together. We came from Hong Kong, Singapore, British Columbia, Pittsburgh, Mexico City, New Zealand, Seattle, Whidbey Island, California, and Kansas. It was a diverse and fun group. There were artists, two Olympic athletes, teachers, nurses, therapists, a yoga teacher, a Zen priest, administrators, business leaders, and a Presbyterian pastor. All of us were drawn there by the poetry and the beauty. But even in this company of wonderful people, pride and self-interest can butt their ugly heads in. First, there's the thing about being out of your own context. In this group, I was not the pastor or the singer or the mother. On that first day, the nervous little kid in me was asking, "Where am I going to sleep? Where are we going to eat? What if no one likes me?" I noticed that when we loaded into the three vans that would take us to our destination, and then we would walk, I noticed that after the first couple of days, I had to stop myself from always grabbing the front seat in the van. And at mealtimes, that food looked so good, and I worked up an appetite. I had to stop myself from being first in line and grabbing the table with the best view. I hate to admit it, but it just seems like when we're uncomfortable, we just want to elbow our way in for ourselves, right? Let each of you look not to your own interests, but to the interests of others. Pride is the opposite of God. Pride isolates, and we're called to humility, to service, to kindness, to love, indeed, to life itself. Really, having the Christ mind goes back to the golden rule: love your neighbor as you love yourself. When we look to the interests of others, we have the Christ mind, and that builds community. Can you think of a time of experiencing vital community? Maybe you were at table with your family or friends, and everyone's talking and laughing and listening, and you suddenly notice that old arguments, disagreements, misunderstandings fade as your affection grows. And we realize this is the desire we have so deep within us, this desire for unity, and it brings such joy. Over the course of the week in Tuscany with my new friends, I was reminded not to make snap judgments about people you just meet and your first impressions. Some of the people who seemed the most perfect had really serious struggles in their lives. And some of the people I thought were the most difficult ended up becoming my best friends. We learned about each other's losses and fears and hopes. In the course of walking many miles together, we had a few difficult moments and much beauty. One day we were driving in the vans through the Chianti region, and as we were going through fields where there's no cattle or no people visible, I saw a man standing in the field with a little tiny weed whacker. And I thought, what on earth is this individual doing out there, you know, whacking weeds in that patch? No one answered me. We just kept going, and we parked up to Valpaio, and then we began our walk through the hill village and out back into the countryside. It was a 10-mile walk, and we didn't really know where we were going. Part surprise, it was part of this whole program to surprise us. So about 7.5 miles through the trip, the journey walking, just as the sun is getting low, and we're tired and thirsty and hungry, and we're actually covering so much ground, we didn't stop that much to drink water. We just kept going. Well, we rounded the bend, and there in a field were tables and chairs facing where the sun would set, and there was a very large banquet table with olives and bread and Chianti wine and fruits and vegetables and pork, and the butcher who laid all this out for us welcomed us with open arms. We couldn't believe it. We realized that as we had been walking, someone lovingly all afternoon had prepared this beautiful, wonderful surprise for us to feed us. And so we sat down in chairs, and strangers a little while ago who are now friends, we broke bread and drank wine and shared stories and enjoyed the incredible beauty. Love gathers us. This grace is offered to us, strangers, friends, and all the world. I'd like to close in sharing this poem that I wrote. Here is how to love life. Hold it as tenderly as a mother carries her infant warm from sleep. Feast on it with loved ones and strangers, with people you disagree with. Let the flavors melt on your tongue. Sing it in a grand chorus, letting your soul shine out. Paint it with bright colors, pausing to really see without preconceived notions. Dance with it all night, letting the beat vibrate through you, making your sternum hum. Sit with it gently, trusting, breathing deeply, knowing that all the love you give and receive shapes us, makes us. We make life together.